Blog Talk Radio.
Join us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and listen to us at www.naturestalkshow.com.
Well, hi, Ken. It's just you and I here. Ken McKeon is not here. Not sure what the issue is because I just talked to him less than an hour ago. So maybe he's doing something or he got involved with something, and hopefully he'll join us. But, Ken, this is going to be your show this evening. We're going to talk about the green scene, lawns versus native plants and more. And what kind of, I'm assuming you guys wanted to go in the direction of what is more beneficial. Am I right?
I think so, Mary. And thank you for the welcome. It's an argument that's been raging, I think, for decades, actually. And in especially in Australia, anyway, in the olden times, everyone had a nice green lawn, which they watered and applied fertilizer, which made it grow, which means you had to cut it. And it was a vicious circle. The more you watered and fertilized, the more you had to cut it. So in my own mind, to me, that's a waste of three things: water, fertilizer, and gas to run the motor mower. Now, all our listeners know that I'm from Australia, which is the driest continent, and water is an expensive and precious commodity over there. So anything we can do to limit our water use is encouraged. And one of the things just before I came over here, I came over to North America in the year 2000, and in that last decade before I came over in the 1990s, everyone seemed to be switching away from green lawns and either planting trees, which is good for the environment and the native birds and little mammals that we have in, well, marsupials that we have in Australia, or putting in veggie gardens, which is another good use of something that is really just a money pit. Otherwise, you can grow your own food, and, you know, if you don't want to use fertilizers and pesticides, you know it's organic, and it's probably better for you. What do you think, Mary?
Well, I think I agree. I think having native plants is an asset.
Sure, it certainly helps all the wildlife.
Instead of worrying about these nice trim lawns, I happen to find that there's several old families here where I live, and they have the native plants, just only native plants growing in their yard, just native to Missouri. And I tell you what, it is beautiful because all year round there is something going on. But in the spring and summer, the most beautiful plants, like the coneflowers and stuff, and you see all these amazing animals. And just think, where I live, we have I have owls that fly, and I have an old tree in my neighbor's yard with the big hollowed-out thing, and there was a family of them living in there. So I think native plants are a good thing. And I personally, I don't like a lot of lawns. What about you? I mean, native plants would be the way to go. You'd have less worry about keeping it up to date and all that stuff. What do you think?
I agree with that completely. When I was still in Australia, I was under the impression if I planted an extra one tree, that's about 3 square meters I didn't have to mow. And I was all for that, so I planted trees everywhere. The entire front of my house, I'm from Gympie in Queensland in Australia, the entire front, I didn't have a lawn. I had a jungle. Well, it would be a jungle now, as long as my ex hasn't cut everything down. But I had planted shrubs and cycads and palm trees, and native trees all across the front. And most of down the back of our house was planted that way too. There was probably only about, I'd say, maybe 80 square, ooh, probably 50 square meters of grass that I actually had to cut. And that took virtually no time at all. I also had put in vegetable gardens as well, using a no-dig system just with straw. And I was producing plenty of food for my family and our neighbours.
Mm-hmm.
I always gave it away. We had so much. I wasn't wasting gas on the mower.
Right.
And
so you weren't polluting the environment with
gas. I
wasn't
polluting the environment, and all the birds just loved it.
And you know, me, here it is. When I cut my grass, okay, I never use a bag on my lawnmower because the cut grass goes back into the ground as fertilizer, or what do you call it, mulch?
Mulch, yeah.
Which helps the worms and all the other bugs that live in the dirt break it down, and it enriches your yard.
It really does.
It helps, and all of the little roly-poly bugs, I always call them beer bugs, you know, because they roll up in a little ball and you can roll them around with your finger. All of those and ants and every little bug that's in that soil is what's needed to keep your yard healthy. So just think, you fill up your yard with native plants, bushes, trees, whatever. It's only a benefit to our environment and to the health of and preservation of all of these amazing animals and bugs. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, you're completely right again. Since I came to North America here, things have been a little bit different. I live in a housing development now and in a series of triplexes, and we have to, one's got to look, it's in the clause, the contract, the sales contract, one's got to look the same as the others. So I'm kind of forced to have a lawn here. But I don't fertilize and I don't water. If it's a particularly hot summer, the grass goes brown.
Yep.
Doesn't worry me.
Doesn't bother me either. I mean, it just kind of protects itself, Ken. It goes to sleep. I mean, yeah, it dies. It's not really dying, but it's kind of, what's that called?
Hibernate.
There you go. It hibernates because it protects itself. It knows how to protect itself during drought. You know, when the rains finally come again, the grass rejuvenates. It knows how to protect itself. So, and you see, I agree with you. I agree 100%. And, I would much rather see my grass turning brown instead of out there putting all these chemicals on it that are killing the bees and the ants and all these other bugs that we need. Because all it does when you're using that fertilizer and bug spray is killing the most beneficial insects to the health of our environment and planet.
You know, most of the fertilizer that you put on washes off with the first rain anyway and enters into the storm sewers, and then it goes into the natural waterways, which does kill the fish and everything in there too.
And it also goes into your crops. If you stop and think about it, water evaporates. So what goes up comes down eventually, am I right?
Yep.
And so when you're using these chemicals, and people, you know, I mean, I work in a retail store, and today I was just amazed at all these people buying wasp and hornet spray. So I finally had the nerve to ask somebody, I said, do you have a problem with these things? I said, I know that they're scary, and I hate them in my house. I said, but I don't buy spray. Oh, I'd spray and kill every one of them, from the bees on up to the hornets.
But
that's kind of the wrong
attitude. It's going to be a problem eventually,
yeah.
As we're finding out, actually.
Really, it really is.
Yeah. Actually, I saw something wonderful last summer. Apparently over in in California, they've had the worst drought for a long time there.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy came up with the idea, he'd spray paint your lawn. He'd spray it green in a water-soluble paint that
uh-huh.
is that doesn't harm the environment or anything. It must be some sort of a food coloring or something. So he'd go along with his pump, and he'd spray your seemingly dead grass. So
uh-huh.
From a distance, it would look bright green, look great. And it wasn't until you got up close to it that you'd see that it was actually...
That it was just paint.
I thought that was a wonderful idea, actually.
Heck yeah. You know, check out places like Alaska and stuff. I mean, they have lots of green going on there, even as cold as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because things have learned to adapt and survive. And I love seeing green grass. I love the smell of cut grass. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing like getting out in your yard and playing in the dirt with your plants, planting new plants, raking up the old leaves. And so what I do is rake them up and then spread them out at the base of my plants.
That's it, yeah.
And that helps them, okay? And so, go ahead, honey.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, when I was in Australia, if I had too many of the branches of the native shrubs or trees that I planted there, I'd just cut them up into little pieces, and that would add to the mulch that was around the base of them anyway,
uh-huh.
as it would in nature. Trees lose branches all the time, and you know, in nature, and they just fall to the ground, and eventually they rot away, and all contribute to the enrichment of the soil.
Everything has its purpose. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
And composting. I mean, that too is a thing. That's what that shade, I mean, mowed grass is good for composting. You can even take, you know, your old coffee grounds, eggshells, that kind of stuff, mix
yep.
it into your lawn things. If people want to have lawns, that's fine. So here's a few things that you can do. You can compost, you know, mix all of this, orange peelings, you know, whatever, banana peels, all of that. Put it into a compost pile, you know, mix it up. That gives the insects and the worms and everything something to work with within your ground. And I tell you what, and then if you can, you want to spread it out around your yard, you will have one of the most beautiful yards and plants just by doing simple things. So for me, with as many endangered plants, native plants, I would rather have native plants in my yard instead of a green, pretty trimmed lawn.
Yeah, that you had to cut every week.
I know. And, you know, you can go out there and pull the dead blooms off your plants and put them down there. The ants love it. The bees love it. And we gotta start working here and using our brain to figure out how to protect our bees. Because
yeah.
without them, we have no food. I mean, a lot of food will disappear without bees. They pollinate quite a bit of things.
That's right.
And
I'm in Australia. I'd love to be able to do that up here now, but I can't. Apart from having most of my ground planted out with native trees and shrubs, I had a composter, a mobile, a rotary composter, one where you give it two turns every day, and
mm-hmm.
and after about 10 days or 2 weeks, you end up with soil, and it worked really well. Whatever grass clippings I did get, I put in there. I also had a worm farm.
Mm-hmm.
And all the household scraps would go into that. And if it was getting too wet, you'd just add paper. If it was getting too dry, you'd just add water.
You
and,
know, I happen to think they're fascinating.
They're marvelous things. And the worm farm gives you two things. It gives you liquid fertilizer,
mm-hmm.
which you can spray on your veggie garden or anything. Great for your vegetables or any fruit trees or anything. Or even your household plants. And also, it gives you the worm compost. Now, that's usually too rich to apply just straight. But if you add that to your rotary composter, to your lawn clippings, it really activates it really quickly, and you can usually turn lawn clippings into good soil in about a week.
Really?
With the worm castings in there.
Wait, but let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Will that help draw bees back? How can we attract bees now, Ken?
Well, it would attract it in because I'd put that soil that I made in the composter and that around my trees and shrubs. And most of the trees and shrubs in Australia are flowering. So they would flower. Or I'd put them around my veggie garden. And then all the vegetables, they flower too. So there's quite a few bees in my area. I wasn't the only one doing this, of course. There was quite a few people in my area latched onto this idea, and we were all doing it. And the numbers of bees in our area just before I came over here did definitely increase over a period of a couple of years because of what we were doing. We weren't spraying insecticides for them. And we were encouraging the growth of these flowering plants, which is great for the bees, of course.
That's interesting.
Mm.
You know, everything we do to try and protect our lawn, this is why it's so much work to have a lawn instead of trying to raise native plants and trees and shrubs, is people just have gone crazy on it, you know. Look at the neighbor's yard. So here's a perfect example. The guy who lives across the street from me, when I rebuilt my porch and my yard and all that kind of stuff, he did the same dang thing.
Mm-hmm.
The same dang thing, okay? I put this evergreen bush in my yard. I had no intention of letting it get huge. I was going to keep it trimmed back and stuff. But because this guy copies everything I do, now I just let it grow.
Don't hide him.
And it is huge. I don't trim it, okay? And I love it because under it there's no grass growing, and it's got the pine needles that fall off and into the ground. And, you know, there's lots of bees and ants. I mean, not bees, but worms and ants under there. I was amazed. I didn't think the worms would be there. But when it rains, even though it's protected by the evergreen branches, it gets wet under there. And those worms love it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's two things I think are essential to actually life on the planet. One of them is bees or other pollinating insects, and the other one is worms in the soil.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't burn. I don't believe in burning it. The guy that lives next door to me, he always has a live Christmas tree. I can't do it, Ken. I cannot get live Christmas trees because it kills me that they're only decorating my house for a week and then they're gone. My mom says, well, don't be silly, because those trees are grown just for Christmas. And I said, I don't care. To me, it's killing something. And he always piles all of his wood out here, even though it's against the city ordinance to burn, and he burns it, okay, always. Not me. If I cut down branches or trim back my rose bush, I cut them down in little pieces, and then I take them to the backyard, and I have this spot, you know, it's got like a raised area that's kind of like got railroad ties, and that's where I put all of those shavings when I trim back the rose bushes and stuff. We cut the branches down little and we put it there, and then we'll add whatever, the bananas and whatever else we need to, and we kind of mix it up. In a couple of weeks, those branches will have they have the little roly-polies that I like. I don't remember the name of them. And
the little lice bugs, yeah.
Yeah, and then they have the worms under it, you know, and it's wet and it's moist, and everything is just going back into the earth where it came from.
That's right, yeah. Actually, a friend of mine had some walk-in aviaries in Australia, you know, bird cages.
Uh-huh.
And he used to go around and collect everyone's Christmas tree because he'd stick them in his walk-in aviaries and the birds would nest in there.
Really?
He didn't care if they were dead. The birds didn't care if they were dead. They were a good nesting place for the birds. So he ended up with all his aviaries full of these old Christmas trees, and the birds loved it in there. So
I have a rabbit family that lives in my every
never
year.
Never talk to an Australian about rabbits. We don't like them.
Every year, that family of rabbits, she has babies, and I don't know if she dies, and then her babies grow and take over. But every year they're in that same spot out there. So look.
Yeah, nature kind of finds a little niche and utilizes it. That's why I think it's essential. We're destroying the environment through urbanization. So all those animals that we're displacing, they have to live somewhere. So I think if we can replace our cultivated lawns with some native plants and give those animals that we're displacing somewhat of a habitat, every little bit helps, and it all contributes to a better ecosystem, I think.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I wonder, Ken, before there were houses everywhere, I was thinking about this a couple of weeks ago when I was driving in Sugar Creek. There's so many beautiful trees, okay? And they're just wild. I mean, they've cut it out and put a road that goes through there and stuff. But it sits on the top of a hill, a real giant hill, or a little mountain, okay? And there's
mm-hmm.
quarries and stuff over there and mines. And I was driving through because the trees are all budding out and stuff, and I was thinking how beautiful it was. Got it, parked my car. This is before my car quit working. Got out on the side of the road, walked to the edge until you couldn't walk anymore or you'd go be tumbled down this steep hill. And these trees and wild plants, you know, are just beautiful. It just takes your breath away. And and all you could see the squirrels, you could see chipmunks, you could see rabbits, you could see deer and wild turkey, all of this stuff living in this stuff. And, you know, if we would just kind of let our yard take care of itself and don't worry about a pristine lawn, I think it'd be even cooler, don't you?
It would. It would certainly, in my mind anyway. Even the way things are here with my lawn here, we've got a like garden beds here. And with native trees and shrubs, and to wake up and the cardinals are singing or the blue jays are going, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to wake up to.
Wow, it is.
And I imagine it's much the same for you.
Oh heck yeah, I could go sit out there with my rose bushes and all that other stuff, and just. Enjoy the sights and sounds and watch all the little bugs and bees scurrying around and stuff. So it's wonderful. I don't know. I'm just partial. I don't know what Ken McKeon would say, but I'm just partial to native plants in the lawn, as my lawn.
Well, I was actually talking to Ken yesterday, and we were talking about this a little bit, and where he's from, of course. Water is a precious commodity in the Southwest too, and he's all for making planting, in his case, drought-resistant native shrubs, because that's what they all are down there.
Mm-hmm.
Or he always likes to put a little pond in too. Again, that takes away from the area where you would normally grow grass, and it gives all the local birds or local animals a place to access water.
Mm-hmm.
In his case, in New Mexico, is extremely a precious commodity, especially when they're going through a drought, like in in the middle of summer?
Well, you know, in New Mexico as well as Arizona, they have those gorgeous cactuses. And, yeah, they look scary, and they might poke you and sting you, and they might even make you sick. But when the rains come or when spring comes, they have the most beautiful flowers ever.
Oh, they're wonderful.
They do.
They're great.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing much better than a cactus flower, actually.
I know. And they're just gorgeous. I love them, so, but I can't keep indoor plants. Now, I can have pots outside, and I plant all kinds of plants in them, but I cannot keep indoor plants. I wind up killing them, so I've given up on the idea of ever having any more potted plants inside. I will take my chance with keeping them outside. I can keep them alive, and I can raise them from babies, and then they have babies in the little pots, and then you transplant them and stuff. But I cannot keep a plant alive in the house. They're not meant to be in the house. They're meant to be outside.
Yeah.
My personal feeling.
I do all right with my houseplants, and some of my houseplants have to be houseplants because they would die up here in Canada, out in the environment. Not this year, but normally we have up to, I don't know, maybe 3-4 foot of snow during the winter in some of our garden beds. So the plants that I plant have to be able to handle that, and they do. But I still like my tropical plants coming from Queensland in Australia. I keep my tropical plants inside because, well, I have to here. I would like to think that if I was living further south in the States, I'd find a way of keeping them outside. But I haven't studied the zones that you can plant different things in. Like, could you have a palm outside you live, Mary?
Yes. Yes, oh, I can have a palm. Okay.
A palm tree.
Oh, a palm tree. No.
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 It would die in winter.
It would die in the winter because, you know, our winters are not as bad as yours, but I live in Missouri, which is a prairie state, kind of like Kansas, which Kansas is more prairie than we are.
Right.
If you've ever driven through Missouri and Kansas, there's a big, huge difference. In Kansas, it's mainly flat. No trees, no nothing. It's just flat. And if you go through there in the summertime, it's hot as you know what.
All right, yeah.
Because you got all that sun and you got all that farmland and everything, and it is hot. There's no trees that helps cool it off, okay? Missouri's different. But our winters are kind of like yours. And if you've ever watched the old Western movies, we get huge blizzards sometimes in the winter. And in the summer and spring, we get giant thunderstorms, which I happen to love. You know that.
Right.
Kansas gets actually worse storms than we do. We're also known as Tornado Alley. So you know, it's amazing. It's amazing the scenery, how it changes, okay? Like I say, there's nothing like nature, Ken. And we won't be able to grow palm trees, but we have some beautiful red maple trees that get huge. And we have white oak, and we have all beech nut trees. We have all kinds.
Yeah, most of the trees up here, well, all the trees up here are either deciduous or evergreen. That's it. In Australia, where I'm from anyway, we had eucalypts, gum trees, and they tend not to lose their leaves.
Really?
So to me, a tree should always be green. I remember the first time I came, first winter, I was up here in North America, and I said to my wife, all these trees are dead.
Dead?
What happened? Because to me, if anything's just bare branches, it's dead. You said, no, they're not dead. That's just what happens.
That's what happens. They go to sleep.
Yeah, and I said, oh, baloney. They're dead. And next thing you know, a couple of months' time, it's spring and all bursts forth in new life.
I know, you know.
It's really amazing, actually, especially if you've never witnessed that before. When you grow up with it, you expect it, and it's really nothing to you. But just to come from where I did and to see that, it was amazing.
Well, because Australia gets cold too. I don't think they get snow, but
down in the south of Australia, away from the equator. I was from Queensland, which is where the Great Barrier Reef is, and it never really got below about probably a good winter's day. The minimum might be. Or to get down to zero, but only for the first hour until the sun came out, and then it'd get to about 12 degrees Celsius. Now, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, I'm sorry, but probably high 50s. That was as low as it ever got where I was from.
Mm-hmm. Really?
So, at that temperature, none of our trees had to lose their leaves.
When my son was born, my youngest son, it was the coldest winter in Missouri history. The actual temperature was negative 12, and the wind chill was around negative 28. And this is Fahrenheit.
Oh, my goodness.
Nobody's car started when I went into labor, except for my brother, because he had a garage. He kept it in there, and he had a heater that he had on in there, so that the car wouldn't have issues.
Wow.
And we had like, I want to say 8 or 9 inches of snow, but under that there was an inch and a half of ice. So it took us what would have been a 15-minute ride to the hospital, was an hour and a half. And it's not fun when you're in labor and you're sick. I had a bucket in one hand. You couldn't roll down the window. My brother's gagging, and my mom's saying, "Shut up." But this is the kind of weather that we get. I mean, that was rare, and it has not been that cold since. And
I know.
So
still your native plants can handle that to an extent, can't they?
Yeah. And you know what? The trees all came back in the spring.
Yeah.
And that's
the problem with our lawns, too, I think. You've got to pick a grass pertaining to your climate. Like the grass that we use up here, where I am, might be very similar to the grass that you would use if you had a lawn, but I'll bet you it would be a different species. And certainly I know the grass they use in Florida is completely different to what we use up here in Canada.
Hmm.
So there's all these different kinds of grass. The grass that we used to have in our lawns in Australia is completely different to what we use here, or indeed even in Florida. We spent two Christmases ago, we spent it in Florida, and I was looking at the grass and I said, wow, this is really different to what I was used to in a similar climate.
Wow.
So, everywhere have their own particular set of problems, I guess, and different ways to overcome it. If you do want a nice green lawn, well, that's fine. But just know that to keep it green, you've got to pour a lot of water on it, and you pay for the water these days, don't you?
Yeah.
And then if you want it to always look green, you put some high phosphate fertilizer, isn't it? Turns it green.
Uh-huh.
And then that makes it grow better, and then you've got to cut it, so you're utilizing the gas to run the mower, and as you alluded to earlier, you're polluting the atmosphere. There's noise pollution as well. So it ends up costing you a lot. All you can do instead is just go to your local nursery or farm outlet, wherever, and pick up some native trees. As well as saving all that money, you'll be doing a favor for all the wildlife, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know, I encourage everyone to just get a small portion of your yard if you're not ready to do this, okay? Pick a small spot of your yard, like a 3-by-4-foot section or something, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of put you a little pretty fence or, you know, those little picket gate things that you can buy for $5 a piece at the store. You know, use that as your little fence around there and plant you just a little plot of native plants and shrubs. Just try it. And see how happy just watching it grow and take over and all of this. See how happy that makes you feel when you know you don't have all that extra work. You don't need to spray your plants with poison to make them beautiful because they'll take care of themselves.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how it is down there, Mary, but up here, if you go to a nursery, if there's any native plants at the nursery, they're all tagged rather prominently, you know, like this is a native.
Uh-huh.
And so you know that if you, especially here in Ontario, if you grow that plant instead of maybe a rose bush or something, I don't know. But if you plant that, you know that it'll last the winter. You know that it's somewhat drought resistant because our summers are somewhat dry up here. So
are
you're
they?
Not pouring all that water on to the area where you're planting this plant, and invariably they flower, and you can pick all sorts of different colours. Is that much the same down there? Like, are all, if you go to a nursery, are all the plants that are native labelled as such?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and you know, I don't know about up there, okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide to go with native plants, we have the Department of Conservation here, and they will actually can send you free seeds.
Wow.
And they will send you information.
Great.
Oh, it's great. It's awesome. And they will send you information on how to take care of them, and they will send you booklets and pamphlets that show how to maintain them. They will give you suggestions for other native plants. You can actually contact the Department of Conservation in Missouri, and they will help you set this up. They encourage people to grow native plants.
Wow. In Gympie, the town I was in before I came over, every year when you went in to pay your local taxes,
uh-huh.
You'd pay them, and they'd give you a voucher. And you take that to, there was two local nurseries that honored the voucher. You take your pick as to which one you went to, and you could select a tree.
Really?
A native tree every year. So, of course, every time we paid our local taxes, we'd go in and pick a different tree and, with much ceremony, planted in the garden, and that would be an extra couple of square feet that I didn't have to mow. It was wonderful.
Well, here on Arbor Day,
and being a native plant, it was great for, as we have both said before, for all the local wildlife.
Well, when I was a preschool teacher, every year on Arbor Day, we would take the older kids, which was like the preschool, I mean 4 to 6 year olds.
Mm-hmm.
And we would contact the Department of Conservation. They would send each child a little tree to plant in their
cool
yard. And it was all free. It's all free, okay? This is why our state is lucky to have the Department of Conservation. Ken, I should send you a couple of the magazines that they, if you're a Missouri resident, you get a free subscription to their monthly magazine, which is amazing. They talk
wow.
about fishing. They
really
talk about
good.
Hunting. Oh, my God, yes, it's wonderful. I'll have to send you a few, Ken. I keep them.
Oh. Next time we have a public appearance like we did at the NEC convention at Rocky Hill, Connecticut,
when we do our next appearance, you'll have to come along, Mary, and you can bring some. And
oh, my God. I want to come, and I apologize to all of our listeners for not being at in Rocky Hill. And I will explain why. And I know I don't normally air my personal business, okay? But about 3 months ago, my mom passed out driving. She's 84, passed out while driving and hit a tree head on. So since then, she's been having issues. But about 6-8 weeks ago, my car, when I was picking her up from the hospital, my car started acting strange on the highway. By the time I got home, I could barely keep it running. And finally, it just quit running. And I don't know what's going on. It broke my heart, like I say. I had to cancel my plane and the room. But I did convince Ray to go in place of me. And I know that it wasn't me. And I know that several of you have contacted me saying, we missed you. We were hoping to meet you. You will meet me. We're planning new convention appearances. We are hoping to maybe go to the Cichlid. We're not sure, but I apologize, okay? And I was in tears. I think, Ken, you know how heartbroken I was.
I do, actually. But as you say, life happens, and unfortunately, these things do happen, and we can't do everything we want.
Here I sit. I have no extra money right now. I had to help my daughter with a $2,000 payment that kind of took away anything that I had that I could have used. I'm sitting here, no car, which is horrible all by itself because you're begging for rides from everybody. and I hate doing that. So I'm working hard to get me a new automobile, and just be patient, everyone. I will be attending the shows with Ken and Tom, and because I think you're Tom mentioned that he thought you were going to probably go with just about every show that we go, right?
I'm quite willing to do that. I work for myself, so.
So this is why
it's
important.
I can spend that time doing that.
Yeah, and this is why it's very important that we get advertisers for the show.
Yeah, so if any of our listeners, if you own a company or something and you want to some great advertising, contact Mary or Tom.
Or you.
We can talk about things.
Or you.
Or me.
I
know the inner workings, too.
You do. You have all the information, as well as Tom and I, that can help anyone become an advertiser or a sponsor even of our show.
Of course, and if anyone has any ideas on all our different shows as well, if you want us to talk about any particular topic, get in touch with us and let us know, either on the Facebook page or through the emails. The emails you can find on naturestalkshow.com on our website. You can find all sorts of information on there, can't you? Upcoming shows, all sorts, can't you, Mary?
Oh, heck yeah. You need to go on there. And, you know, I think Leslie, Dick, and everyone, you guys interviewed some pretty fascinating people at the convention. And I was in constant contact with Ray and Tom throughout the whole thing. Ray was calling me. I couldn't answer the phone because I was working, but he was calling and texting me. Tom was texting me, and I was driving Tom and Ray insane by calling them every 5 minutes. Is everything okay? Are you guys okay? How's it going? So, but
those conventions, like the one we went to, they're wonderful things. I've been going to conventions for a long time, and they're great weekends. I urge anyone, if there's anything on natural history, if there's a convention anywhere near you, it could be fish, it could be birds, it could be insects, anything, native trees, go along to it. You always learn something. You might not utilize what you learn immediately, but something will come up at some time, and you'll think back, wow, I know the answer to this because I went to that convention and I sat at that talk, and someone told me the information that I'm now going to use. So they're educational and they're fun.
And you know what? We okay, the NEC, the Northeast Aquarium Council, that was our very, very, very first live appearance, all right? Now we've been invited to the American Live Bears. We've been invited to the International Beta Convention. So if you want us to come to the convention that you're involved with, please let us know. We're setting this up. Like I say, we're looking for advertisers and sponsors to help offset the cost of expenses. For instance, Ken is coming from Canada. Tom is in New York, and I'm in Missouri. It gets to be very expensive, especially if people want us to come every couple of weeks. So if you want to help offset that cost for us, please let us know. That would be great. And we would truly appreciate it, okay? So, I mean, Ken, you guys had a fabulous time.
It was fun, and it's the first time I'd ever been in the New England area, and it's a very nice area, exceptional people out that way, and I've found whenever I go to a convention in the States, I meet exceptional people everywhere. There's not a lot of really nice people out there, and I think if you've got a love for nature or anything natural, you've got a propensity to get on really well with most people.
Yeah. Don't forget, we're more than just a fish show now. We changed that a little while back. Nature's Talk Show has actually been around for 5-6 years, right, Ken?
Yeah.
And we went through our changes, we went through our birthing pains, and now we are what we are. We're becoming bigger and better. We're having topics on all kinds of things, like tonight, lawns and versus native plants, and we know that we love native plants, okay?
Yep.
And we talk about endangered species, we talk about monsters in nature, we talk about fine art of paleontology, which tomorrow is what, Ken?
Yeah, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. we're talking about asteroids and dinosaurs.
Another fascinating topic.
It will be. It's all about the extinctions.
Space.
The extinction events that happen, and whether or not they were caused by an asteroid hitting the Earth or not.
Ken, hold on. You keep talking for a minute. Keep talking. I want to grab my cell phone and see if this is Kim McKeon calling, okay?
Okay. So, listen in tomorrow night where we discuss this, and you'll find out the two schools of thought. One is that the asteroid did cause the mass extinctions, and, of course, the other one was that it didn't cause the mass extinction, but it certainly did contribute to it. So, Ken McKeon and I will be talking all about asteroids and the extinction events tomorrow night on the fine art of paleontology. And one aspect, too, is that possibly without an asteroid hit, there might not be life on Earth. It should be an interesting show. So listen in, and together we might learn some new things.
Sounds good to me. So I know that you and I have not touched on everything. Of course, you and I were both thrown in this tonight with Hot Ken here.
I think the problem there, too, is we're both of a very, very similar mind, and actually I'm sure Ken McKeon is, too, that certainly in my mind, native plants should triumph over green lawn every time.
Yeah, I mean, every time. Think about it, okay? Think of what you're doing to help preserve the native plants and stuff in your area. But also, not only that, but you're also preserving the wildlife in your area, too, by keeping native lawns or native yards. So think about doing that for us, okay? And Ken, let me see, there was something else. Oh, we, you and I and Tom and Ken, want to send our thoughts and prayers out to those in Japan and Ecuador who are suffering through some huge natural disasters. And we just had a show on earthquakes, didn't we?
Yes, we did last week. We did a fine art of paleontology on earthquakes and their relationship to paleontological things. And now we're seeing their relationship to us in this day and age. They still occur, and they cause widespread destruction, don't they?
And, you know, I think they were both. Japan, of course, got hit twice. 7 point something the first one, and then another 7.0 on the second one. Just think how devastated they are. And not only that, but all of the life loss, whether it's human or animal life, there's so much going on in Japan, so please keep them in your thoughts, everyone. And check out that episode, because earthquakes are rather fascinating, I think, and I still think if there was no way that the earthquakes, if they didn't exist, that this planet would just build up with all that gas inside and blow up.
I could say something, but I won't there. Yes, the planet does have to let its gas go, just mm-hmm. like mammals do, shall we say.
So earthquakes are really fascinating, and just as much as volcanoes are. I am fascinated by volcanoes and the lava and stuff, because they're kind of along that line of an earthquake.
Yep, earthquakes, volcanoes, they're all associated.
Now, here's the question.
A lesser or greater degree, and all essential. Unfortunately, they both cause loss of life and everything. Certainly loss of property, if not loss of life in some circumstances. But it's a fact of nature. We've got to live with it.
But I want everyone to consider, or even you and I, we should do a show on this, is all of this natural disasters that is happening more often now, could that be caused by man's harm to the environment? That's a very good question, don't you think, Ken?
It is, and I know what side of that argument you'll be on, and it's much the same as the one I'll be on, actually. But sure, I'd love to do a show on that.
I would, too.
So we'll have to schedule that, and we'll let our listeners know.
Yeah,
when
and
we're going to do that then.
And if you guys have any suggestions, any comments, any questions, please don't hesitate to contact Tim. I mean, not Tim. I'm looking at my son, Ken, Tom, and I, and we'll be happy to help. And if you have suggestions for shows, let us know, because we're open for suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget that we have an awesome YouTube channel. We now have a Nature's Talk Show aquarium tank that Tom is maintaining. And he hasn't had a tank in, what did he say, 25, 30 years?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
So he has questions, lots of questions for Ken Borman.
He certainly does.
And if you guys have suggestions, he's like, okay, so we have these fish, but it seems kind of slow in there, and we should put some in there to liven it up. He goes, we could throw a couple of cichlids in there. I said, are you an idiot?
Yeah.
We got
yes,
a
peaceful
community
tank. That's something you have
tank.
To be careful
yeah.
of you, is your mix.
Everybody.
As he found out, actually.
Yeah, you know what? We had to remove some videos, and he's going to be making some new ones of that tank. So we lost the ones where he was setting it up, which is sad. But we'll have other great videos of the live tank. So you guys just be checking it out. And check our YouTube channel frequently in case you actually catch it live. Which is always fun. Ken and I are always on there waiting for him to turn the camera on.
Yeah, it's great to check on its progress and just see the development. like I've got 45 tanks myself.
Oh my gosh.
And you forget what having one tank is like and the joy that it can bring.
Yeah. So you guys, check us out there. We are on Twitter. We're starting to get quite a few followers on Twitter. Some of them are really great nature things. I think one's World News Now. And then we have, I don't remember. You'll just have to go check it out. I've been adding them like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So we probably get 5 or 10 new followers every day on Twitter.
Excellent.
Okay. And I would love to see people follow us on Blog Talk. I think we're going to try something new here soon. I'm not going to say anything else. And I think, Ken, if you've got time when this is over in a little bit, when you get comfortable and settled and get whatever you want to do, I think Tom would like to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you have time. And I know it's your father-in-law's birthday. Please tell him happy birthday from us.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. But for now, I think we're done. I'm sorry that Ken McKeon wasn't here and you had to listen to me ramble with Ken. Like I said, I was not prepared for this. Ken was not prepared for this. We both just spoke to – I just spoke to Ken McKeon an hour and a half ago. He just spoke with Tom and said he was looking forward to tonight's show, so I'm not sure what happened. But please –
should be one of those vagaries of the New Mexico telephone system.
There you go. So don't forget, go check out our website, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Blog Talk. You'll get notified whenever your show is scheduled, and you'll be sent a reminder to tune in when it's getting ready to air live. So check all of that out. If you have suggestions for conventions that you would like to see us attend, please let us know that, too, since that is something that we're very actively involved in now. And from myself and Tom, I want to wish everyone a very great evening and a wonderful week. And, Ken, you, too, for hanging out with me this evening.
Oh, it was fun, Mary. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
All righty. So I want to say goodnight, everyone, and we shall see you here tomorrow night when we talk about asteroids and dinosaurs on the Fine Art of Paleontology. So tune in with us. We'll see you tomorrow.
Good night.
Join us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. And listen to us at www.naturestalkshow.com.